ranked one of America's top research universities, the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee plays a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin. UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Meet the people behind the creativity and discoveries on UWM today. Here's the host, Tom Lujack, Vice Chancellor of University Relations.
Social media, Facebook, Twitter, many of us use it daily to stay connected to family and friends. And, of course, it's become a key source for following breaking news. Well, now, an increasing number of people are using social media as a major source for communicating about their health concerns. On this edition of UWM Today, we meet a UWM professor who's looking into just how pervasive that practice has become. Joining us in the studio is Priya Nambasan, Associate Professor of Healthcare Management at UWM's College of Health Sciences. Welcome, Priya. Good to have you on today's program.
Thank you.
You know, I've heard for many, many years people go to the internet if they have a question about health. You know, how many of us have had an ache or a pain or a spot somewhere and we say, well, before I go to the doctor, I'll just get online and, you know, I'll Google this. Your work is looking at something a little different than that, though, because you're looking at the social media tools as opposed to general information tools. I'm surprised that people are using social media for health communications.
Yes. Social media has been being used in communicating health messages, mostly to get health support. My previous research has been on online health communities. You know, that was before social existence of social media communities. And in that, people shared information, people supported each other. There was an exchange of empathy. But social media is mostly used like, forming your own set of friends and groups for support as well as motivation. And people use it in many, many different ways, and sometimes to follow health messages from news agencies and journals and magazines, and sometimes to follow their own friends' activities in health.
So one of the differences here, though, in those online healthcare communities that you described that have been around for years and years and years, you didn't necessarily have to say who you are, right?
Yes.
Anonymity was present there.
Yes, that's actually the biggest difference between those communities and Facebook communities. Those communities allowed anonymity. If you really wanted anonymity, it was there. And also the biggest difference is that we went to those communities when we had a specific health issue. Just like you said, you Google about this and you land in those communities and then you start interacting with the people there. Whereas in Facebook, you kind of create a profile for yourself and you are this person, and then all of a sudden if you have a health issue, would you disclose that to all your friends and colleagues in your group? And but Facebook does allow you to form a separate group. So if you know that your friends all have the same issue, then you can actually form a separate group and then discuss things in that group.
And you have a little more privacy there, but not anonymity, right?
No.
But I guess I'm surprised, and maybe because my social media habits are out of line with others, but I would find it challenging to get onto a Facebook discussion about a health concern that I have. That's sharing a lot of information, isn't it?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there is that reluctance, but the younger generation actually find it more able to disclose their health information. And that has more to do with stigma. If there is any issue with one of the, you know, some health issues, then you'd be more worried to share that information in Facebook, especially with no anonymity in it. But as we see a stigma going down in many of these illnesses, people are more daring to share their health information, especially among younger population.
Are there any health conditions that are more likely to be the subject of a social media discussion than others?
Depression and depression has always had a very good online community following because that's something that people like to share and get support from early on in online communities. That is the one community that has a highest membership than any other health conditions. But in Facebook and other social media, weight management seems to be very, very popular, among youngsters to share what kind of diet they're following, what kind of exercise regimen that they have. So I see that much more higher than anything else.
You mentioned a moment ago that that younger people seem to be very comfortable using social media for these discussions. Does that mean that that folks over 35 or 45 are not engaging in this?
Not really. I mean, I always tell a story about a 56-year-old woman who came at ER and she with chest pain, and she suddenly her health began deteriorating. She went into a coma, and her physicians couldn't figure out what was going on with her. And she's she was a single mother, and her son didn't have any other information other than the fact that she shared information on her Facebook page. And so he gave the physicians her team password and the account info, and they went and read her Facebook posts. She had detailed information about what was going on with her. And from that, the physicians were able to identify what was wrong with her, which was she had a hole in her heart, and it was sending in blood clot to her brain or something like that. And they were immediately able to go into surgery and save her. So, yeah. And I have been telling that story before I came to Wisconsin, but recently I found out that incident happened here in Wisconsin in Sacred Heart Hospital.
Oh my goodness. That is unbelievable. Yeah, and so essentially putting your health record, your medical record out in social media.
So maybe, social media is a better avenue to get people to talk more details about their health issues than the 5-minute time. She was going to other physicians regarding all these complaints that she had, but they couldn't figure out what was wrong with her, because the 5-minute you are in a physician's office, it's not enough to tell them what was going on.
Good Lord. Good Lord. So we've been talking about Facebook and the creation of communities. And, my daughter has a community with her fellow young moms in her hometown where she is able to go ahead and share privately with a select group of people what's happening and, who's got used toys for sale to, do you have a recipe for this or that? Is Facebook the primary tool then that people are using in the social media sphere for these health-related discussions?
Increasingly, younger people are moving towards Twitter. Facebook has become more for older people now. But I'm also seeing that, I'm taking an interest in Instagram, where people share pictures mainly, but pictures speak 1,000 words. For example, we are studying, we are exploring about vaping related pictures that people are putting up. It seems very much like the early time when cigarettes were advertised as cool.
These are vaping as the electronic cigarettes.
E-cigarettes. And so, is it a channel to get people more motivated to use e-cigarettes? There's a study that came out recently saying that it might not be all harmless. It has some harmful ingredients. So we are looking at how the image of vaping and how there is an identity formation in the social media platform and how that might encourage young people to take on vaping. So there are all these channels, but mainly it is Facebook and Twitter because it has it can form a community around a certain group of people.
Now, big difference, of course, between Facebook and Twitter is how much you can share at one time. Mm-hmm. Twitter still has its character limitation, mm-hmm. so you're talking about 140 characters, relatively brief bursts. doesn't seem like a lot of real estate to be able to share much information about something that can be as complicated as dealing with depression or the challenges of, you know, recovering from an injury.
It seems like, there is a way to work around that because people sometimes like to, interact constantly with other people. So it could be that, I'm going to the gym for exercise or, I'm feeling depressed. Do you want to go and get some ice cream or, and any suggestions on what I should do right now, because I'm bored. So these kind of, quick communications, Twitter is very effective in that way. So young people who are, forming communities, they seem to like Twitter more.
Interesting. So we're talking about the social media world where there is, boy, if there ever is room for describing information overload, it is in these media platforms where you can have this constant stream of back and forth. How in the world are you able to put your arms around all of these different exchanges? How do you research this to be able to draw some more scholarly or scientific conclusions than just a general review of a tweet or of a posting?
Yeah, that's a very interesting question. There are lots of software and tools available where you can capture or download massive amounts of tweets from, for the last 3-4 years or, how many number of people you want. But there are still a lot of issues with these software because, for example, if you look at depression, people can tweet about, very casual things like I'm feeling depressed because I didn't get, certain brand of ice cream from the store, whereas I'm, clinically depressed. So my lab, Smart Lab, which is Social Media and Health Research and Training Lab, we look at it more in depth. Instead of collecting massive data, we look at manually check whether, this tweet is from someone who is clinically depressed, and then look more into the health issue rather than, a substantial, a superficial review of, depression. There is a lot of data there, but trying to go in depth with one health issue is still very difficult. Right now, I'm using more manual evaluation to be more accurate and more reliable rather than using a lot of software to, get a massive amount of data.
So you're looking at evidence that is out there in the social media world. Any plans in your research to interview people who are actually producing these comments that appear on Facebook or Twitter?
I do a lot of survey research, so I send it to people who are interacting in this and get survey data from them. I have looked at in different sets of people, young people and older people. I have done surveys with older people as to how to understand how they use social media and its impact on mental well-being. It's very interesting to compare different demographics and how they use it and what its impact is. Interviewing for the vaping study, the student is thinking of actually having a focus group and interviewing, why they put those pictures and stuff like that. So there are, not just, collecting the tweets and analyzing it, but we also use other methods to, support evidence we get from these data.
Knowing that people are sharing a lot of private information in these public forums, have you come across any examples of people perhaps making a call for help, a suicide threat, or expressing a condition that might require immediate attention, and yet perhaps the person not getting that help? Is there any early warning signs that you've come across where you've said, oh my goodness,
Especially if you look at a depression community or there are a lot of tweets. We looked at data about for people who were clinically depressed, and they do post messages that they are going to commit suicide, and there is there's no help right now in Twitter. If you Google about depression, you get a hotline number, but when you tweet that, you know, you're going to commit suicide, you know, most of the time, you know, there's not much help in those platforms. I think there should be some kind of public health message saying that, you know, you could call this hotline if you're thinking about suicide. But right now there isn't. But if someone, you know, your friend or someone gets it, they could take action about it. But it depends, you know, millions of data coming in at every minute, how many of the friends are, you know, even noticing it.
Yeah, but in this instance, if you are sharing intimate information about your life, and you're doing it with a smaller community of people.
Yes, smaller community, then they could, you know, I recently read in some news where, you know, somebody posted something and somebody else who read it called 911 and got help for that person. So those kind of incidents happen all the time. You know, you tweet something, and especially during crisis situations, people are using Twitter more, and they tweet, you know, flash floods and other things where people are getting stranded. You know, their last resort, their, you know, most important resort is to tweet it into Twitter, and somebody will see it rather than, you know, calling their family members. This is probably the easiest way to get help. And during crisis situation, Facebook and Twitter all have, you know, special, you know, things going on at that time to allow people to tweet about, you know, whether they
set
need
help.
Set up a
help. Hashtag that
yes,
you can follow
hashtag,
specific
yes.
topics.
Yes, yes. So especially if there is a natural disaster or, you know, war-like situation, you know, they do provide help.
You're listening to UWM Today here on WUWM. Good to have you with us this week. I'm Tom Lujack, and joining us in the studio is Priya Nambasan. Priya is an associate professor of healthcare management at UWM's College of Health Sciences, and we're talking about some fascinating work that she's doing in the area of researching the use of social media to discuss, to share, to perhaps debate your personal health issues. In this case, not necessarily with any anonymity, but putting it all out there. Priya, we've been talking about the ways in which individuals are connecting with each other, talking about their depression, their weight management concerns, other medical conditions. I'm curious whether or not you found if members of the medical community are engaging in any of these conversations on their own. Have you seen any evidence that physicians or other healthcare people, professionals, are dipping into that sea of social media discourse that's going on?
Not much, you know. There is more interest in the patient-centric approach and getting more input from patients, but going in depth into looking at patients' conversations is very time-consuming. But on the other hand, healthcare organizations, they have their own Facebook page and they're reaching out to their patients. They have, you know, tweets or Facebook posts so that they can keep connected with their patients, and patients can ask questions or post things on their Facebook page. So there is a social media presence for the healthcare organizations, but physicians, using social media to hear back from patients is not happening that much.
Well, and I suspect that there is probably a bias against providing a lot of advice
yes.
in that sort of online setting because
yes.
you don't see your mm-hmm. patient in front of you.
Yeah, there's liability issues and other things. If I know you cannot provide medical advice through Facebook, and but I think, you know, there's a lot of data there that, you know, a physician could listen in and can benefit. And like the story I mentioned before, you know, reading the Facebook post was actually beneficial. So there are efforts to, you know, to figure out how to incorporate patients' diary-like postings into the electronic medical records and see if that would be more useful.
Does that scare you at all, the notion that that your social media conversations and your conversations about your personal healthcare conditions are out there? You know, we hear so much concern about privacy and, you know, some bad people using information that they pick up on you to, frankly, take advantage of you. Should that be a concern?
It's not much of a concern when it comes with the younger generation, actually. They are much more open to disclosing their health issues. There's another community which is called Patients Like Me Community, which started a long time back, and it was focused on Lou Gehrig's disease, but now it is open to a lot of other diseases as well. And they actually promoted less anonymity to, you know, actually share all your health records, you know, every detail. And the benefit is that, you know, when all these patients come and share all their information, the website, you know, they have, they could, you know, do some statistical analysis.
So they use algorithms to do profiling?
Yes, and the benefit is for the patients who actually share those information. So if you are, you know, in taking some kind of medication, and if you report the side effects, so they can, you know, they can analyze it and say that, you know, 50% of the people who took this medication had these kind of side effects. So it is now those data is being used for research, and they are publishing a lot of articles from that. So it's you know, so that community actually promotes more sharing rather than more anonymity. And it benefits the people who are in that community. So sharing, again, is another big issue is with stigma. So some diseases have stigma, and so people are very reluctant to share it, like mental health issues or, you know, other kind of, you know, like HIV or something like that. People are more reluctant to share it. But for other diseases, people have become much more open and willing to share their health details.
And yet you hear a lot of people who are regulating the way in which healthcare information can be used express some concerns about whether or not insurance companies or employers may use information that a person willingly puts out there in the universe, or perhaps the information is stolen. They might use that information to make decisions that could actually not be in the best interest of the person doing the sharing. You know, do we go ahead and write out a health policy or a life policy if this person is already confided that they've got this condition or is having this sort of problem? Do we hire this person if they're already revealing to the world that they've got a condition that may make their employment more expensive when they join?
Yeah, so the, you know, that has to be addressed with, you know, whether employers can use pre-existing conditions as you know, as a reason not to provide jobs. And the, you know, new health insurance marketplace, you know, they do not want, you know, health insurance companies to take people looking at pre-existing conditions. So those kind of issues need to be addressed at that place. But on the other hand, I have to say that, you know, healthcare organizations need to be more concerned about the privacy issues, because, you know, it takes only one click. You know, a celebrity comes to your hospital and, you know, someone can take a picture and post it, you know. So there has to be policies as to, you know, you can share whatever you want, but, you know, other people's privacy is still important. You cannot, you know, retweet or share that information to all your friends on Facebook.
And you make a good point. If a person chooses to share this information, presumably they do so with the knowledge that the world will know. And if there is a risk, perhaps a person is deciding it's worth taking that risk in order to engage with a friend, a peer, a colleague who has a similar problem.
Yes, and disclosure doesn't mean it is really a bad thing. You know, if they're disclosing that they have mental health and they are taking, they're going for treatment, it's actually good. And it also helps in reducing the stigma regarding mental health and get more people to go for treatment. So for the, as we go along, I'm finding, you know, more and more people understanding that, you know, we should not use stigma to make people hide their illnesses, rather than, you know, and motivate them to go get treatment for it.
Any sense if this activity of sharing your health condition or problem in a social media setting is as popular in other countries as it appears to be here? Do other cultures, do other parts of the world use social media in this same fashion?
I'm not really sure about that. Other countries have their own social media sites, which is sometimes more popular than Facebook, and they have different ways of, liking and stuff, which is different in Japan, I heard. But like you suggested, health has no boundaries now. So if you're, even when you are in Facebook, half your friends could be from other countries. And so there is a social media culture that is spreading, which seems to be more towards openness and sharing information. And that's boundaryless, I think.
How about you? Do you share your healthcare information in social media?
No. I actually do research in social media, but I'm not at all good at using it. I'm like other professors. I don't share much. I'm too lazy to post things and go around liking everybody's posts. I'm there mostly observing and doing research.
How would you feel if you're? Yeah, I know you have young kids. When they get online, would you caution them to be careful about doing this, or would you encourage them if they chose to share healthcare information to do so in their social media world?
I would say some amount of sharing is fine so that they get support and help from their peer group, but I would say not too much. But I'm conservative when it comes to my kids, so
sure.
I would say sharing especially health information shouldn't be something that should be used against people and when they're being considered for employment or other things.
And by the way, you're not alone. I'm in that same conservative camp. Sometimes we'll be looking at postings from my Facebook friends, and my jaw will drop down, and I'll say, "Oh my gosh, TMI, too much information." But if that's what a person chooses to do because it makes them feel more connected to their friends or their support group, I guess God bless them, right?
Yes, and it all depends on your personality too. If you are more outgoing, you want to share a lot of information. Although I do find that sometimes more shy people are more active in Facebook because it allows them a medium where where you can post things, but some kind of distance from either from people. So it depends on your personality and the functions that you have for your own social media page, whether it is for your profession, whether it is for family connection. It depends on that, on how people use social media.
Well, Priya, it's a brave new world. Congratulations on the research that you're doing in this fascinating topic, and we wish you the continued success, and perhaps we'll see you online.
Thank you. It was an honor to be here with you.
Priya Nambasan, Associate Professor of Healthcare Management at UWM's College of Health Sciences, is our guest on this edition of UWM Today. That's all for this week's program. We'll see you next week at the same time. Take care, everybody. See you online. I'm Tom Lee Jack.
You've been listening to UWM Today with host Tom Lujack, the weekly program where you get to meet the people behind one of America's top research universities, University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Playing a vital role in shaping the future of Milwaukee and Wisconsin, UWM's diversity, academic excellence, and world-class research contribute to the region's economic development and quality of life. Learn more at uwm.edu.